With this book, we hope to have shed some light for you on the fabric of good business strategy, on what truly works and what doesn't. We hope we've made a tangible contribution to how you think about strategy by identifying the levers that contribute most to successes and failures. You can now combine these into calibrating your own strategy against a vast set of companies and their actual journeys. Most important, we hope that reading this book has given you a lot of practical inspiration on how to change the way you use facts in your strategy room and boardroom to beat the social side of strategy. Strategy remains part science, part art. But with the underlying research of this book, we now have the understanding and the tools to effectively address some of the perennial conundrums around mobilizing management teams and companies. If you embrace the idea of probability and internalize the ideas of this book about strategy to beat the odds, you might find your own way of overcoming human biases and addressing the social side of strategy. We are confident that if you do, you will have a better shot at beating the market and creating value for your stakeholders. Hey, why not? Let's make it happen. Appendix. This appendix covers 1. Our sample and method, 2. A note on economic profit and total returns to shareholders, and 3. What is different if a firm starts at the top or the bottom versus the focus in the body of the book on mobility from the middle. 1. About our sample and method. The results in this paper come from a multi-year McKinsey & Company research effort to quantitatively and objectively assess the likelihood that a strategy would deliver on its promise to beat the market. We didn't want to produce another framework. We wanted to find out how to beat the odds. Our data source. This outside view is based on a rigorous statistical analysis of the biggest reliable data set we could muster. The 3,925 largest revenue non-financial companies in our proprietary McKinsey Corporate Performance Analytics company database, spanning 15 years, 59 industries, and 73 countries. Time periods. Our sample was divided into 3 5-year time periods, 2000 to 2004, 2005 to 2009, and 2010 to 2014. To get rid of noise, we averaged economic profits within those periods, counting in the sample if there were enough data for at least 3 of those 5 years. We have recalculated the model several times across different starting points, one of the luxuries of this book taking so long to build, and the results have been extremely robust to these time shifts. The sample. For our time periods, 2,393 companies had sufficient data to track their movement on the power curve over time, meaning economic profit was calculable for 3 out of 5 years in both 2000 to 2004 and 2010 to 2014. This resulted in a sample that spanned 3 5-year periods, 59 industries, and 62 countries, and is used as the consistent reference point across the book. The final sample of 2,393 companies had median revenues of $5.2 billion in 2010 to 2014, with an average of $12.4 billion and a range of $0.7 billion to $458 billion. Of the final sample, only 101 are above $50 billion, and only 31 companies fell above $100 billion. The sample is also very global. Asia leads the list with 945 firms, followed by North America, 744, Europe, 552, South America, 72, and the rest of the world, 80. Calculating economic profit. Economic profit was calculated based on McKinsey's proprietary corporate performance analytics data, which ensures a clean and apples-to-apples data set across companies, jurisdictions, and time. The method is consistent with our widely read text, Valuation, subtracting the capital charge invested capital multiplied by the weighted average cost of capital, or WACC, from net operating profit less adjusted taxes, no PLAT. Our calculation for WACC was based on global industry betas. However, given that most companies earn profit in local currency, an artificial weakening or strengthening of the exchange rate to U.S. dollars will make changes in economic profit look too big or too small. Therefore, a conversion factor based on the average inflation differential between currencies over the period has been applied to convert economic profits into U.S. dollars. Industry classifications. We used the accepted standard for industry classification, the Global Industry Classification Standard, which was developed by S&P Dow Jones Indices. The four-tiered GICS structure consists of 11 sectors, 24 industry groups, 68 industries, and 157 sub-industries. Taking the middle two levels as the most meaningful for descriptive purposes, both the original database of 3,925 companies and the final set of 2,393 data-sufficient companies span 20 industry groups and 59 industries. The odds model. For each of these 2,393 companies, we gathered publicly available data on their actions, for example, from DealLogic, summarized into 40 scoring variables. We then employed a multinomial logistical regression model to estimate the contribution of these 40 possible scoring variables to the probability of moving up and down the power curve. Our algorithms sorted these into 10 variables that, together, produced the most statistically significant and efficient regression model. Predictive power. To test the accuracy of our model, we used a receiver operating characteristic, or ROC curve, for which scores of over 80% are considered to be a strong predictive result. Our analysis tracks moves between 2004 and 2014, for which the ROC score is 82.8. This means that for any pair of an upwardly mobile firm and a non-upwardly mobile firm, our model gave higher odds to the upwardly mobile firm 82.8% of the time. Despite this high score, predictive models based on historical data can reflect noise in the historical data as much as the tested variables and are prone to overfitting. We therefore ran our model across different time periods and still yielded a ROC score of at least 78%. So while our results are derived from backward-looking data, we are confident that they are meaningful for forward-looking forecasts. 2. A note on economic profit and total returns to shareholders. Total return to shareholders will only differ from the risk-adjusted cost of equity when there is a surprise factor. Therefore, to understand the impact of performance on share price, one must account for what was expected to begin with. To do so, we collected our sample into a 5x5 matrix, one axis cutting into quintiles for the average enterprise value to NOPLAT multiple in the starting multiple, the other for the subsequent evolution of economic profit, scaled relative to starting size. See Exhibit A1. When we do this, we see very clearly that the best place to be is to have low expectations and deliver high performance, and the worst is to do just the opposite. However, the matrix also shows that for an executive, starting with low expectations matters just as much as delivering breakthrough performance. The other clear takeaway is that growth in economic profit, no matter the starting multiple, generates higher returns for shareholders. The highest performers delivered 17% total returns over the period, while those in the bottom 60% of improvers delivered just 7%. 3. How the odds look different from the top or bottom. We've made general observations about endowment, trends, and moves based on the experience of companies in the middle quintiles, but of course that's not where everyone lives. In fact, by definition, 40% of companies don't, with half of those in the doldrums and half of them where we all want to be, in that top quintile. And yes, there are important differences if you aren't starting in the middle. If you start in the middle, you have just an 8% chance of ending in the top quintile, while starting in the top quintile gives you a 59% chance of staying there. Perhaps more useful is knowing that the thresholds and impacts of the 10 mobility attributes vary depending on your starting position. Looking at size, for example, the definition of what large is changes slightly, and being large has a different impact on your odds profile depending on your starting point. As a middle company, you're large if your revenue is in the top 20% of companies. At the top, you need to be in the top 10%, and at the bottom, you only need to be in the top 30%. When you start in the middle, being a large company improves your odds of moving to the top quintile from 8% to 23%. When you're at the top, being large improves your odds of staying there from 59% to 74%. When you're at the bottom, being large only improves your odds of moving up the curve to the middle or top from 57% to 61%. Life at the top. For companies starting in the top quintile, Exhibit A2, making a big move by increasing CapEx doesn't have a statistically significant impact on the odds of mobility. That's not to say that once you're at the top you can cease capital expenditures. It's just that being so far ahead of your industry on CapEx won't necessarily improve your odds of staying in the top group. The group of star companies already in the top quintile may have already demonstrated sufficient investment opportunities to grow economic profit, so growing the capital base further doesn't move the needle. Or the well of investment opportunities whose returns will be better than cost of capital has started to dry up in the industries where the star companies operate. Instead of moving big on CapEx, companies in the top quintiles are better served by the other big moves to defend their lofty status on the power curve. Scouting for acquisitions, reallocating their resources to the optimal uses, innovating their business model, and especially improving productivity. Productivity is the most important big move when starting at the top because the scale of invested capital and high ROIC have already got you there, and it's much more difficult to find accretive investments, acquisitions, CapEx reallocation, or growth projects that really move the needle. Life at the bottom. For companies starting in the bottom quintile, Exhibit A3, past R&D expenditure doesn't appear to change the odds of moving up the curve. For bottom companies, the strongest swing factors are the industry trend and capital expenditure, and you want to avoid being in the bottom decile of differentiation improvement. But overall, as much as there are differences around the edges depending on where you start on the power curve, and they are big, the overwhelmingly consistent theme is that there are 10 attributes that matter in determining your odds of moving up the curve. Regardless of your starting position, you have an advantage with better endowment. The trends will push and pull you over time, and you should adapt to them the best you can. And you should make as many big moves as you can relative to competition. The fact that life is different at the top, in the middle, or at the bottom was not in the strategy room. Now it can be.
This has been an Audible Studios production of Strategy Beyond the Hockey Stick: People, Probabilities, and Big Moves to Beat the Odds. Written by Chris Bradley, Martin Hurt, and Sven Smit. Performed by David Morantz. Executive producers Kristen Lang and Mike Charzik. Producer Samantha Chan. Copyright 2018 by McKinsey & Company. Sound recording copyright 2018 by Audible Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.